Welcome to The Edges of Lean. I'm Bella Engelbach, and in this podcast, we explore the human and creative side of lean thinking, unusual places where lean thinking is practiced. We meet people who are practicing continuous improvement in many different flavors and styles. So come along with me on a journey to the edges of lean. Episode 7, Continuous Improvement in Planes, Trains, Automobiles, and Ships. There are those places in our world that are arrival and departure points, a port, a bridge that crosses a great river, an airport, a helipad. At these places, drivers, transportation companies, airlines, shipping companies, passengers, and more rely on a well-connected and continuously improving infrastructure. Who's working on these improvements? Here to tell us how it happens are Lisa Dewey-Mateer of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, and from the other side of the U.S., Jared Thatcher of the Port of Seattle. Lisa Dewey-Mateer and Jared Thatcher, welcome to The Edges of Lean.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bella.
Today we're talking about continuous improvement and port authorities. I need to understand what a port authority is. And I know that both of you have, your organizations are actually different in what your responsibilities are. So Lisa, could you start with first and tell us about your port authority?
Lisa Dewey-Mateer leads the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey's Office of Continuous Improvement, a small team that applies lean and design thinking to transform processes to meet internal and external customer needs. She's been with the Port Authority for 10 years, and in that time has managed projects across multiple disciplines, from exploring new technology for the Perth train system to logistics planning for the World Trade Center redevelopment. Lisa has a bachelor's degree from Brown University and a master's in urban planning from Rutgers University Blaustein School. She, her husband, and two daughters currently live, work, and learn from their home in Maplewood, New Jersey.
Sure. So what is a port authority? First off, it's a governmental public authority that's usually formed by a legislative body to operate ports or other transportation infrastructure. So the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which is where I work, we were formed almost 100 years ago in 1921 by an act of Congress. And Congress gave consent to the two states to form an interstate agency to develop and modernize the port district, so around the New York port. And the goal there was to improve commerce and trade.
And what is under the responsibility?
Sure. So the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, we have the responsibility of the airport. So Newark, JFK, LaGuardia, and then two smaller airports, the marine ports on both sides, both states. So in Brooklyn and Staten Island, as well as in Elizabeth or Newark, we have a PATH train that connects New York to New Jersey, the George Washington Bridge, a few other bridges, and the Holland and Lincoln tunnels, as well as the World Trade Center site. And the bus terminal. Can't forget about the Port Authority bus terminal.
Wow, that's a lot. And Jared, so tell me about Seattle.
Jared Thatcher has been using Lean for the past decade to help a variety of companies in various industries, including Daimler Trucks, Nike, Mercy Corps, Alaska Airlines, and many others. He is the author of Parenting the Lean Way and is an international speaker. In fact, Jared earned his MBA from the University of Edinburgh in Scotland in 2010 and currently is a process improvement and program manager at the Port of Seattle.
Well, it's on the other side of the country, of course. actually, we don't have as many as employees as the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. In fact, Lisa, how many do you guys have?
That's a great question. I think it's around 7,000 to 8,000 Port Authority employees.
And we're at about 2,200. So, you know, a little bit of a difference there. We have one airport to their five. We also have the cruise terminals. So we have a lot of cruise lines that come in for kind of those Alaska tours and then going down to Mexico. And then we also have commercial fishing marinas and terminals. We have, I think, five marinas that we have, which, you know, everything from a kayak slip to, you know, a super yacht. We have economic development properties that we have as well, you know, to foster, you know, growth and business and trade. And we were actually formed 10 years earlier in 1911, so a little bit older. But really, a port authority, at least the way that, you know, I kind of look at it, it is a government agency, but it's a special purpose government agency. So we're really focused on, you know, fostering economic growth. We were originally created to make sure there wasn't any monopoly in trade, so that not one company, you know, could depict, you know, which company could or couldn't use the, you know, the port facilities and things like that. So that's really what we were created for. We do have a tax revenue that we receive, but the vast majority of what we do is actually selling services, you know, leasing space to businesses, you know, charging the airlines to use the gates and that sort of thing. So we actually generate, unlike most government agencies, we actually offer a product, a service that we charge for and get paid for. And so that's where most of our revenue comes. So just like most businesses, we were especially hard hit when COVID hit.
That's interesting, Jared. Obviously, not surprising, a lot of similarities. But did you say you do receive some tax funding?
I believe we do have a small amount that we receive, but it's like negligible.
Yeah, we're primarily revenue generated with some obviously grant funding, specifically following like Sandy. And I didn't realize your agency was born 10 years earlier. How neat.
Yeah, 1911.
Nice.
Yeah, that's amazing to think about, right? When you think, you know, we kind of think of the East Coast as sort of being the older part of the country. And you had Lisa, you have sort of a special need there with the two states and the need for cooperation between the two states.
Exactly. Well put, cooperation between the two states, right? That was one of the reasons for the formation back almost 100 years ago.
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt on that note. So we also have, for the major like cargo ships and stuff like that, there's another port. We actually operate kind of a joint venture with the Port of Tacoma, a little further down the Sound. And so at one point, what was happening is, you know, we were charging a rate, they would undercut us, and then, you know, and then we would undercut them. So at a certain point, they said, well, let's put those facilities together and then operate it as one. So there's a joint venture between the Port of Tacoma and the Port of Seattle to operate the major seafaring ports, facilities, and terminals.
So it sounds like you sort of have to have two heads on as you're doing this. One is the government service head, but also it's a business, right? You are a revenue generating organization, and you have infrastructure to maintain, capital to maintain, and you have, you know, obviously you want to be offering services that people want. In a little way, you know, in one sense, you have a bit of a captive audience. Somebody wants to, you know, get into New York City, they're going to have to take a tunnel or a bridge. There's not, you know, maybe the ferry, but you have a bit of a captive audience. But it's still different, perhaps, from being in some other governmental agencies that don't have that revenue generation opportunity. It's an interesting place to be from a continuous improvement perspective, then.
Yeah, it definitely is. And at least, you know, since I've been with the port a little over a year, so, you know, coming from private industry to government has been a little bit of a transition. It's ostensibly the same sort of work in terms of lean and continuous process improvement. Although I'm actually working more with other companies that we do business with, like Alaska Airlines, Delta, some of the other big carriers, a lot of the below wing service companies like Swissport, McGee Air Services, Delta Ground Services, those sort of companies. And we're working on different projects, improvement projects to coordinate our efforts as well as their own. So it's there's a lot of joint collaboration that we do with other companies, which is something that I never did before because it was just maybe cross-departmental, but never working with other companies from maybe some suppliers when I was in manufacturing.
Yeah, that's something that really struck me, actually, as both of you were talking. I mean, just thinking about all of the different parties that you're involved with, it is, I think, probably a bigger range than many of those of us who work in in a single business might ever experience. Mm-hmm. So how did you each get involved in continuous improvement? So Jared, I'll let you go first this time.
Okay. So I think it's just a natural part of it just makes sense, right? So way back when I first started working, it was always, I would look at things and, there's got to be a better way to do it, an easier way to do it. And I always got frustrated when people would say, well, that's just the way it's always been done. And it's kind of like, well, why? So I think really when I got my MBA a little over 10 years ago, it was, I think that one of the classes that I had there on operation management that really, we didn't in depth with lean, but it just seemed like, oh, I've been doing that all along. I just didn't know what it was called. And when I ended up getting my first job after after the university, it was with Daimler Trucks North America. And so my first position was as a continuous cost improvement analyst or specialist. And that kind of took elements of lean, and we looked at different parts. We coordinated with the suppliers, like I mentioned, and we would look for ways to improve the process, improve logistics, improve different things to lower cost. And then shortly after that, Daimler decided to do a global initiative to bring lean from the manufacturing side, where it's been for years, into the indirect side or the office side. And so we were partnered up with McKinsey consultants, and then ended up working every 4 months. We would take it into a different department, work with that department. And so really that's where I got trained in a lot of the tools, a lot of the methods. Shortly after that, I was recruited by a management consulting company, worked for like Nike and Mercy Corps, Portland General Electric, Standard Insurance, the whole, different companies. I'd kind of decided that, being kind of the cousin that nobody really wanted around as a consultant, I wanted to get back into, business where I felt like part of a team, part of a family. And so there was a position open at Alaska Airlines. I went to work there, and eventually I saw this position open up here at the Port of Seattle, and it just felt like the right fit for moving and progressing my career. So I made the jump into government.
It's really interesting to me, though, whenever I ask that question, that I get a different answer. There's no one path, right? Mm-hmm. So Lisa, how about you? What's your story?
No one's ever said to you, when I was in third grade, I said I want to be a continuous improvement professional.
That's
maybe
right.
Come on, right?
Not yet.
So my background is in urban planning. And when I was in planning school, I actually interned at the Port Authority, and that became a full-time job after I graduated. And I was doing a rotational program where I got to work on different assignments, PATH, executive offices, World Trade Center. And so learned a lot about the agency rather quickly, and was in those roles working on projects that probably could be considered continuous improvement projects. There's a longstanding issue. Let's change it, right? You're sort of moving around and you're using your skills and learning. I spent a couple years after the rotational program in different roles. And then our then executive director wanted to stand up a continuous improvement program. And my former boss, who's since retired, asked if I would join him in doing that. And so it was a natural transition because a lot of the work that I had done in prior roles at the agency and the relationships that I had built, I was, you know, building from that and able to then apply methodologies like lean and design thinking to projects across the agency. And so I've really been learning as I've been in this role, which is now, I guess, we formed the team about 5 years ago. And so learning all the skills while also applying them has been a lot of fun. It's endless fun. Really, it is. Like you mentioned, Bella, we being both Jared and I and others who work in similar organizations, there's so many different businesses and touch points and so many layers of customer, internal and external, that you just learn so much and get to work with colleagues and external partners to improve together. So that's how I got to be a continuous improvement professional.
It sounds like you both love it too.
Oh yeah. Well, I think that's the thing that resonates most with me is that, you know, there's nothing better than, you know, working with a team, helping them, you know, where they're frustrated, even morale in the team is just terrible because they have a terrible problem. And when you go in there and you help them, you know, break it down and see the, you know, the issues and take it into smaller, you know, chunks and work on solutions and get to the root cause, you know, 6 months later, you're walking down the hallway and they come running out. Like, oh, you got to see what I'm doing. You know, they're so excited. Remember that process that used to take, 3 days every week that we had to do, we've got it down to 15 minutes now, you know, so, wow. You know, so, I mean, it's those sort of things that really, I think, it's not a job. It's actually fun to, you know, help people see that there's a way out of their, you know, job and stuff by improving it and getting rid of the waste and finding value. So yeah, it's great.
That's actually one of the reasons that I loved my internship and I came back to the Port Authority now 10 years ago, because everyone loved their job. And I learned so much in that summer, you know, going out to our facilities, talking with folks at the port or the airport and learning about, you know, how we were doing capital work in our path tunnel. And people just love sharing that knowledge. And then in a continuous improvement role where you're constantly scoping and working on improvement projects with your internal customers across the agency, you get to see that every day and learn and develop relationships with people who genuinely care about their love their job. So it is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
One of you said, Jared, I think it was you said, well, you know, it just makes sense, right? It makes sense to do continuous improvement, to do lean. And I was intrigued when you were talking about some of the customers that you have, that some of them also obviously have their own continuous improvement or lean programs going on. What do you see as being, is there an increasing number of organizations that you're seeing doing that? Is it?
Yes. Yes. There's more and more people that are getting it. I also see, especially when I was a consultant, oh, this is a fad, right? This is something that, you know, the management's, you know, putting us through. This is the next thing. It'll be gone in 6 months.
It's just another program, right?
It's just another program. And, you know, depending on how bought in management is, it may be just another program. And there's going to be elements that stick. There are going to be things that, I can use that tool. But, you know, fundamentally, in any organization, you've got to change the culture. One of the companies that I worked with, they rewarded people that went out and solved problems. So if you were a firefighter and you did a great job, you progressed in the company. Yet the people that actually understood their job and their responsibility, they would get to the root cause, they would solve those. And so from the perspective of, you know, upper management, they're not doing anything because they're not fighting all these fires. Well, it's because they figured out what the fires are and they put them out. So they didn't, you know, and why they were starting and they, you know, so they come back. And so until you change that philosophy, especially from upper management, and you're actually looking at, you know, the results of what a manager is doing, and you're rewarding people for getting to the root cause and getting rid of those, you know, problems and solving and making, you know, the process easier, it's never going to change. So
Yeah, that's been my experience too, actually. Lisa, what about you? What are you seeing in your customers?
We are, well, there's one other point that Jared mentioned, and I'll jump to that, Bella.
Okay.
We talked about sponsorship and that sort of executive leadership and sponsorship of continuous improvement. When I say that, I don't mean just the groups that we represent, but that concept for an organization. And we have such strong sponsorship right now and such prioritization of reaching out to our customers, understanding their pain points. And that's being driven from the top. And I think we're seeing just so much progress and movement because of that. And then that hits on your question, Bella, which is, you know, what are we hearing from our customers? And I agree with what Jared said that, you know, at times people may think this is the fad, right? The terms are changing, but the concept's always going to be there. The need to understand your customers' needs and desires, understand the root causes of your problems, and then solve for them so that you're not in a situation like Jared mentioned there, you're putting out fires. And so while I think the, you know, design thinking, user-centered design, lean, like the terms evolve and change, but the concepts are there. And I think that's what we see in the organizations that we work with. Some of them have continuous improvement groups. Some of them have groups by other names, but they're all doing this sort of work. So that's sort of what we're seeing over here on this coast.
That's really interesting to me. You know, I think particularly anything involved in transportation, customers tend to give it a bad rap, right? You know, your flight was delayed, or you know, the package you ordered wasn't shipped on time, and so it didn't arrive on time, and so you kind of look at it and say, well, gosh, I could have figured out how to do that better, but you know, people generally don't understand all the complexities involved in that. And you know, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was thinking about this podcast was about this relationship between all these the different agencies that you have, and especially about TSA. And I've observed, you know, people like to, you know, say bad things about TSA. I've seen so much improvement in TSA in the past couple of years, just incredible improvement. I've been thinking there must be somebody there, you know, who's working on that. There has to be somebody there who's working on that. They didn't get better like that all by themselves. So it sounds like what you're saying is there's a lot going on, but perhaps, you know, it's invisible and until you see the result of it.
Yeah, and you're right. There is a lot of complexity. When I was at Alaska Airlines, a project for just over a year that was all about how do we improve you know, the scheduling of the aircraft, because in essence, that's the product of, you know, the airline is, you know, what time is it going to leave and where's it going to go? And, you know, and all that. So, we could spend several sessions just talking about the complexity of, you know, an airline doing the scheduling, why you end up having delays and things like that. And, you know, to be frank, you should be glad when there's delays because, you know, you're going to be flying on a safer plane. So it's usually a maintenance issue. They're taking care of it and they're going to make sure that you're having a safe flight. So just plan accordingly.
That's good to know. For when we get to fly again.
That's right.
Which I think you're both hoping comes soon. What's been the impact of the COVID pandemic on your agencies?
I mean, go first.
Sure. clearly a massive impact on, I'm sure, both of our agencies from a, you know, passenger ridership perspective, are the situation that many of our private partners like the airlines and such are in. So it's dramatically, shifting. It's an evolving situation, as we all know. I'd say applying that question specifically to continuous improvement work.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of ways, what's happening as a result of the pandemic has, in my mind, sort of reinforced some of the key tenets of continuous improvement, because this is such an evolving situation, that need to have constant feedback from your customers to understand their challenges, their needs, the need to sort of craft clarity in everything that we do. You know, everyone has these competing priorities now, not even just in the work, but also in, you know, homework, that this swirl we're all in. The need for radical collaboration. We're all now also, many people are working in a different way than they used to work. Either they're remote or they're working with hybrid teams. And so how do you sort of break those barriers? So I think in a lot of ways, this has just sort of highlighted the needs and sort of the core principles of continuous improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from our standpoint, it's everything from looking at, you know, the equity, diversity, and inclusion, you know, standpoint of things. So we're wearing masks, right? Well, that makes it difficult for people that are hard of hearing, you know, the hard of hearing community to communicate when they're going through TSA and stuff. So how do we address that? You know, we're looking at, you know, our police and looking at, you know, the way that they do their job and how that can be improved. We're also, you know, some ways we've been affected really, really hard where we didn't have any cruise lines come through. Well, that's a huge chunk of the revenue that we generate by supporting them. And, you know, with them shut down, that hurt. Not so much for, you know, the fishing fleets, but still that was a definite impact to the port. But yeah, it's all about figuring out, constantly improving. You know, I had a project that I was getting ready to kick off, you know, huge, multi, you know, departmental. And the day that we were all told to go home, the following day, we were supposed to have this this workshop. So we're trying to, you know, frantically figure out how do we do a Kaizen event and do it on Teams, you know, and what does that look like?
On Microsoft Teams.
Yeah, and Microsoft Teams. And so it became one of these things where we ended up canceling it because we had no idea how to do it. It's like, okay, I could share my screen and then I type everything really slowly as everyone's giving me ideas. Not going to work. And, you know, through the course of really quickly, we ended up realizing we need something. And so I kind of like hit the perfect time to design some sort of an application and I wanted to do these things. And then I started Google searching that and found there's several you know, things out there that fill that need. So Mural, which we're using, there's Miro, there's Stormboards, there's a whole bunch of things that allow for virtual collaboration. And once we figured that out, we started, you know, trying virtual, you know, Kaizen events. And I've probably done at least two a week since probably about 2-3 weeks of this, you know, going down. So I've done probably close to 50, you know, workshops, both internally within the port, as well as, you know, involving like Alaska Airlines and Delta and others. And so there are things that I miss being, you know, there. The go and sees are a little bit harder to do when you're having to do it virtually, but still possible. And there are other things that I actually like where, you know, a lot of times people want to jump ahead in the process, but you can tell them, hey, if you have an idea, you know, just attach a comment to the sticky note. Well, I don't know how many times Lisa or Bella, you've had this experience where you say, that's a great idea. Hold on to it. We'll get back to it. And then when you get back to it, they're like, I completely forgot what that idea is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now you're able to actually capture that. So you can stay in sync with, you know, going through the process flow of generating the, you know, the Kaizen pain points and then prioritizing those and then, you know, starting to get to the root cause and coming up with the ideas. Well, now they can be attaching ideas like, oh, here's some, you know, statistics about this problem or here's, you know, here's this or here's that. And so you can really capture more data without interrupting the flow and everybody's involved. And, you know, they've come out of those sessions actually more energized than some of the sessions that we used to do because of that interactivity. So, continuous improvement is, you know, it works even in continuous improvement. go figure.
Well, that's really interesting because I think that was our big fear, right? When all this happened, well, we can't go and see anymore and we can't do those standout workshops that we've been so used to doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just have to get creative and there's pluses and minuses for sure. But it's.
And this topic of like, how do we do our work virtually? Is sort of what catalyzed, in my mind, Jared, I don't know if you would agree, but the work that our respective teams, when we really started coordinating and collaborating, was back in March, because we were all trying to figure out, how do we do this type of work virtually? How do we maintain momentum on ongoing projects? How do we start projects virtually? You know, how can you, should you recreate a 3-day Kaizen, you know, over a 3-day workshop, or should you stretch it out? But that kind of, and we've joined each other's sessions to just see, you know, to sit in and see how we're doing that kind of, how we're tackling these challenges and getting to productive end products, even though we're doing things completely different than we used to. So it's been, from my perspective, really helpful to have folks like Jared and Mandela and Penny and others on the Seattle team, and then others and other that from other agencies as well. You know, we were with Vermont earlier this week, but as sounding boards, and we've all, I think, learned together. And that's been another highlight, really, that kind of collaboration, I feel like, wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for the virtual work.
No, I agree. And that's actually one nice thing about government, is you're not worried about competition or anything like that, right? So we can collaborate, and we've been collaborating. So from our standpoint, we've worked with like the Washington State Patrol in looking at their facility and how they build up their patrol vehicles and then decommission those. And because we also build up our port vehicles as well, so you know, we were able to do a go and see, like, literally about a week before the COVID shutdown happened. So it was perfect timing. But we've also coordinated with and of course, the Port of New York, New Jersey, and others. And so we can share information and we can do that. I could never do that with, another manufacturer, unless you happen to be at a conference and you just happen to chat, maybe a little bit on LinkedIn. But, being able to have that ability to coordinate and say, hey, we're having this issue. And oftentimes, Lisa and her team will go ahead and say, hey, we're getting ready to do this project. In fact, we're getting ready to roll out MS Teams into the port. You guys just recently did that. And we're like, yeah, we actually accelerated it because of COVID. And so we put them in touch with, some of our IT people to go through, lessons learned and best practices. And so we were able to share information, and, that reduces costs. It also reduces having to hire, expensive consultants, which is a good thing too for us.
So this sounds like a question for, for a different kind of podcast, but how did you two meet?
Yeah, well, I actually, when I first started, it was one of the things that I was a little bit frustrated with, because there were so many questions I had working in the airline industry. I'd never been in that industry before, but there was nobody else to go to get feedback on how do I incorporate some of these lean things into the airlines. And so when I got into government, the first thing I thought of is, hey, there is no competition. So I wonder what other port authorities are also using lean in their organization. And so I just started doing a Google search, and I ended up finding Lisa, and we coordinated, and we did, I want to say it was probably November last year. We ended up doing a half hour call, and then we shared some material. And the funny thing was, Lean 101 class and their Lean 101 class, we both had the exact same project, which was how to fix the badge renewal process at the airport. And so that was hilarious, because that was actually the first project. I think we started Lean in, I want to say, 2013 here at the port. And so it was funny that was the first project that we were asked to fix. And that was one of the first projects they did as well. And it was both of our training materials. So that was kind of fun to see.
Yeah. And then it must have been, it was early March, couldn't have been much further than the second week of March, where we reconnected again. And then we've been connecting every a couple times a month since March, through either, full meetings with both teams sort of talking through issues, or sharing through our Microsoft Teams site, or the one-off questions like Jared mentioned. If something comes to mind, I wonder if Seattle's been working on this. And it's been really helpful. And one thing we've started doing is not just joining other agencies' trainings, but doing some cross training, which is something we should explore more, Jared.
See if absolutely
there. But there's, like Jared mentioned, there's a lot of knowledge, and we are in a position where we're able to share experiences without paying for them, right? And we're all going to be more resource constrained moving forward. And so I think capitalizing on, you know, sharing information, doing trainings for other agencies is something we'll be doing more of.
Absolutely. In fact, that's actually another thing I'm working on right now. I've been going out and identifying all of the port authorities, getting email addresses, phone numbers, and stuff like that. So I'm going to actually start up a network and just make our training available to them. We'll probably have different sessions for, whether it's a maritime, issue, whether it's an airport issue, whether it's, a rail or bridge issue. And so we're going to go ahead and my goal is to have that started up by the end of the year. But there's well over 300 port authorities around the country. And I even have some other people in South Africa that are interested in joining and utilizing, their lean services as well as, so I'm hoping that'll be something that we can coordinate, get best practices and really help a lot of us, of the smaller ports, especially be able to understand problem solving and going through the process of using lean to improve their services.
So if you're listening to this podcast and you're working in a port authority and you're curious about lean, how do you find Jared? Is it LinkedIn the best way to contact you?
Yeah. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's Jared, J-A-R-E-D, last name Thatcher, T-H-A-T-C-H-E-R. You'll find me.
All right, good. Jared wants you to come to the Port Authority Lean Party. So
that's right.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and I have to say that someone who pays tolls on the bridges and pays airport fees and the tickets that hopefully I'm buying in the future, I encourage everything that you can do to share knowledge and do that in the least expensive way possible. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And actually just off of that, I wanted to mention one thing. I did lament earlier about not being able to coordinate with other airlines about how are they using lean and stuff like that. Yet when it comes to safety issues, this is actually one thing I think the general public would be able to know and assuage some of your fears with flying. Ever there's a safety issue, the FAA has set it up where you report that. So if something happens, in JFK, then we know about that in Seattle. And all of the other airlines know that too. So they can look and see, are our practices best practices to take care of this? And so in terms of safety, that's the one area where all companies go ahead and collaborate together whenever they have an issue or, a near miss and that sort of thing. So that is one area where all companies do coordinate. Because, they want to have, the safest, flying experience. You don't want an airplane to go down.
Nobody wants to be, obviously.
Yeah. So that is the one area where there is collaboration among, competitive companies. So that's good to know.
Yeah. And so if people have learned to collaborate for that, then that's a really good sign for learning to collaborate for other things, right?
That's right.
Yeah. So, Lisa Dewey Mattia and Jared Thatcher, I would like you to think back to when you were starting your career. What would you say to a young person who is thinking about going into that mythical young person who's thinking about wanting to be a continuous improvement professional? What would be your big piece of advice to them?
Go ahead, Lisa.
Fine, I'll go first. I could see that, Jared. I think as you think about yourself and your career, and then as you get to a place where you're building a team, the biggest thing in my mind is building a culture of constant learning. I've got to give a shout out to my incredible team. I really think it's the best team in the world. My team, everyone on that's part of our team, they're constantly learning. We're constantly learning from each other. We're pushing each other. And I think that is just key to success, regardless of whether it's continuous improvement or, another profession. I think something I brought up earlier, but I do think is also really important for continuous improvement is building strong sponsorship. And I think that's critical early in your career and as you move along. sponsorship for your efforts and programs. And obviously part of that is sort of not up to you. It's sort of the organization, where you are in the organization, but building it, you can build and create sponsorship. And I just think that's critical, specifically for continuous improvement efforts. Sponsorship is so critical. It's probably at the top of the list in ensuring success. So I think a culture of learning and surrounding yourself with folks who you can learn from, and hopefully every once in a while they can learn a little bit from you, and then sponsorship.
It's interesting when you say too, Lisa, about sponsorship, because as you were saying that about, you know, there's obviously sponsorship for a continuous improvement approach and building that culture. But for young people too, isn't that personal sponsorship, knowing that you have somebody in the organization who that you can go to, that you, you know, who can give you advice, can help coach you through situations. I think also somebody outside the organization as well who can give you a completely external perspective. So, yeah, I think there's probably two points as far as.
Yep, absolutely. Well put.
Jared, what about you?
Yeah, no, I actually, you took one of the points with networking. Oh,
and that's what happens when you don't have me go first.
No. And I'm taking a little bit, you know, slightly different track. So for young professionals, I feel that we should be teaching lean, agile, you know, all these problem solving methods and ways of thinking and organizing, you know, thought. Earlier in school, and not waiting until you're, you know, in graduate school, but, you know, actually in elementary school. You know, I think of Willy Wijnants. I don't know if you know him, but he created EduScrum in the Netherlands. Go ahead and look that up. Google it. It's awesome. You know, he's empowered the students to go ahead and take the learning and be responsible for that. So they don't move forward, you know, use the Kanban board. They don't move it until done, until everybody in their team, usually a group of four, has learned that material. And so, you know, they have, they call it burn up charts instead of burn down charts. But they're working together. They know how much time they have. They know if they're on track, if they're behind. And he's teaching them how to go ahead and actually take ownership. And because the ownership is placed on them and they just seek help from the teacher when they need it, kind of a pull system, right, instead of a push. The learning, actually, he found that the students were doing like one grade better. And early in my career, I realized that a lot of these tools, and actually it happened when I came to the day and my wife had her hands on her hip and was waiting for me at the door, which is never a good sign. So I'm thinking, the anniversary, you know, did I forget to, you know, what did I forget? And it turned out she was just having a really tough day with the kids. And so she said to me, well, why can't you take the things you learned in your MBA and the things that you're doing, you know, at work and use those to help the family? And it was like this Venn diagram came together and it was like, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, why am I keeping them separate? And so, you know, funny enough, I ended up writing a book called Parenting the Lean Way, which, bit of advice, never do that because your kids and your wife will use that against you forever. But, you know, these concepts, it's been great because the kids on their own started using, you know, a Kanban board to do their own homework. I didn't suggest it. And one day I came by, what are you doing? It's like, shut up, Dad, it works. Okay. But they've been using that. My son actually has used, you know, some of those principles in working with a company that he started working with, and now they're talking about making him a partner in the business. And he's only he's turning 17 tomorrow. You know, so it can happen, and if you know how to use these skills, it really benefits you. So first, youth, go ahead and do that. Second, don't get so dogmatic in the lean methodology that you think this is the only way it can be done. I've done some polls on, you know, are you willing to, you know, do a virtual, you know, Kaizen event? And there are people that are emphatically, no, never going to happen. Can't do it that way. You have to adapt. You have to be, you know, flexible. And things that work for manufacturing don't necessarily work for HR or for, you know, accounting. You have to, but the principles, the underlying principles work. So you just have to, you know, the tools, the way that you teach them, you just have to be flexible. And then the other thing that I would suggest is if you can learn to see the big picture, and this is difficult, but you have systems within the team, you have systems within the department, and then there's systems that bridge departments and run the entire organization. And then even beyond that, right, with suppliers and so on and so forth, you have to be able to see how all of those things interconnect. When you do, you actually become extremely valuable to the organization. Case in point, I was working on a project. Somebody said, it would be great if we had this data instead of waiting for it. The data we currently get is about a week or two old. If we could have live stream data, it would really help our group. And I said, well, that's out of scope, but I'll keep that in mind. Next day, I was talking to one of the analysts in a department. This group had been talking to this department for years, trying to get them to come up with something. And it never became a priority for the other group to help this other department, right? But I went to one of the analysts. I said, hey, do you guys have this thing that can provide live data? He goes, oh, yeah, we have a dashboard for that. It's like, could you share that with this other department? Yeah, let me give them access. Within 5 minutes of this three-minute conversation, the team that had been at this department that had been asking for this data for literally years had it. And they came back afterwards and they were like, that's exactly what we've been looking for. That's probably going to save the company about $1 million a month because we have better data to make decisions with. So when you can connect the dots, when you can see the big picture, you need to, even if it's just going out and taking other executives or other managers out to lunch and just asking them, what do you do? Tell me, just wanting to understand the organization. Do lunches like that, when we can get back together for lunches. Yeah. But, take them out, ask them questions, learn what they do, learn what their frustrations are. And you become the person that can actually put people together. You become extremely valuable, and that will help your career to advance. But there's also a caveat to that, and I'm probably taking up way too much time, but the caveat is I've seen a lot of people that are utilizing Lean that have had their careers hurt because of that. And what I mean is there is a natural propensity to avoid change. And I have seen people attack and go behind the back and do some backstabbing where they will attack the person that's leading the Lean effort and they don't want to change. And so they, you have to just be aware of the nature that could happen. And the way to avoid that is to over-communicate, to make sure that everybody knows what's going on, to write down the commitments, to put that out there and make sure that you're staying on top of the administrative paperwork, as it were, kind of the project management side of things. And if you're doing that, I'll do more to protect you, because it does happen where unfortunately people will go ahead and not like the fact that you are kind of messing up things, right? So you just have to be aware of that as an issue. But yeah, if you coordinate, you have as you get more and more people excited about it as they see the improvements, but you do have to be a little bit leery of that.
It's situational awareness, right?
That's it is situational awareness, absolutely. But, you don't always see situational awareness. I mean, unfortunately, I was working on one project and figure out why nobody was working with me until I found out that the director had sent an email to all of his managers saying, don't work with them. We're too busy. Well, you could have come to me and said you're too busy and I would have, given you guys some slack. But, now you've kind of undermined what I'm doing with all of, the managers because of whatever, hangups you had. And part of it was he was in the process of leaving the company and he just didn't want to do anything. You find that out afterwards. So yeah, it's situational awareness, but it's also making sure that you're just staying on top of things and really having those conversations to get to the root cause and with people, right? Kind of breaking back the onion peel and understanding what their needs are.
It's the root cause of what's happening with the person, not just the root cause of what's happening in the
process. Which is, the EQ side of things, that emotional quotient, you have to have that as well. And so that's something that you develop over time as you're working, but it can definitely be learned. So, yeah.
And as Lisa says, continual learning, just be a continual learner.
That's right.
Wow. Well, thank you, Lisa Dewey-Mateer and Jared Thatcher. I've learned a lot about port authorities and a lot about continuous improvement and lean. in those agencies, and I just really appreciate you spending time with me.
Well, thanks for having us.
It's a lot of fun. Thank you so much, Bella. I'll talk to you soon, Jared.
Yes, definitely.
This is Bella Engelbeck, and I'd like to thank Lisa Dewey-Mateer and Jared Thatcher for being my guests on The Edges of Lean. The next time you go over a bridge, catch a flight, or open a package that came from overseas, think about the processes involved and send a mental thank you to the people who are constantly improving our travel and shipping infrastructure. What intercompany or interorganization or interagency cooperation and learning could you help to generate when it comes to continuous improvement and lean thinking? Please join me in exploring more of the edges of lean. There's a lot to learn. The Edges of Lean is written and produced by Bella Engelbeck. This is a Lean for Humans production.